America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And what a great late spring day to talk about butterflies. Why butterflies? Because butterflies are amazing. And if you take a quick look at them and you look at them in any detail at all, it may change the way you see the whole world. 1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. This is our Science and Culture Hour, and a particularly special and interesting one because I just watched two outstanding documentary films. And for people who like nature movies, movies that sort of celebrate the glories of the natural world, the amazing complexity and the dazzling variety of nature, there are two of them, one about birds, one about butterflies. They're called Flight and Metamorphosis, and they're posted up at our website at michaelmedved.com. They're both available on DVD and on Blu-ray, and both of those two outstanding and gorgeously and artistically rendered documentaries are feature our guest, whose name is Dr. Paul Nelson. He received his PhD from the very prestigious University of Chicago. And the subject of the PhD was the philosophy of biology and evolutionary theory. Dr. Nelson, welcome and congratulations, particularly on Metamorphosis.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm glad you were able to watch the film. I think it's really outstanding.
It's beautiful. It's just one of those things, and it's stuff that I never thought about before. Let's talk for just a moment, because I think this focuses why this is so important. On what monarch butterflies do, I never really realized this. I kind of, like everybody else, you see butterflies, oh, aren't they pretty? But these butterflies go back to the same volcano in Mexico. They all do, hundreds of thousands, millions of them. And they do it based not on their own experience, but based on some kind of genetic memory. What is going on?
Well, they have a navigational system that would put your Garmin to shame. I mean, I challenge any of your listeners to try to walk from Scarsdale, New York, let's say, to central Mexico without getting lost. Yet the monarchs do it with unerring accuracy. 60 miles a day sometimes they cover. And they've got multiple systems for doing this. Like if it's a cloudy day and they can't track the sun, they have a backup system for that. And we're privileged in North America to see this because no other butterfly anywhere in the world makes such a long migration. It's really amazing.
What do they get out of going back? And it's usually like their great-grandparents were there in Mexico at one point.
That's
How
right.
many generations?
They've never been there. Yeah, there is a cycle of generations. Three or four generations separate the monarchs that make the trip from the ones that you see, let's say, flying around your garden in the summer. What happens in late summer is the generation born in late August, early September, they shut down their sexual behavior, they change the way they feed, all they want to do is get south. And they make this long migration, they live 9 months, which would be like us living 900 years.
Are they delayed at the border?
They sneak across without any problem. And actually, 2 years ago, my wife and I were in that area. We went to see this site. There are several of them. We went to one of the most dramatic. Millions of monarchs, orange and black, everywhere, like a natural cathedral. Took our breath away.
Okay, this is one of those things. And the other documentary, Flight, also goes into some of the things that birds can do that totally, there's no entirely rational scientific explanation for this, is there? I mean, what do they get from going to the volcano in Mexico?
You know, it's a good question. You'd think, you know, why not just hang around, stay somewhere in North America, don't make this long trip. I don't think that question has ever been answered. It's clear that they need to do this to have this, you know, successful life cycle for the species. But why the long trip? It seems to be entirely gratuitous. I think it's frankly, the designer showing off, saying, I'm going to build these little creatures, and they're going to get all the way down to Mexico and back just to show off. Now, of course, I don't mean that with, you know, know, total sincerity, but there is an element of whimsy in what we see. It seems over the top.
Okay, and let me mention something that isn't in these two documentaries. By the way, this is something free, and we love to give away free stuff. There is a fantastic book, and I can't recommend it highly enough, and it's free. You can download it for free. It's written by one of the finest writers in America, really, David Klinghoffer, who edited it and wrote many of the articles. And it's called Metamorphosis. It's a companion book for this film. If people go to the Science and Culture banner at michaelmedved.com, they can get David's magnificent and beautifully illustrated new book that also has contributions in it by our guest, Dr. Paul Nelson. Dr. Nelson, you also must have, at least because you're based in the Pacific Northwest at Discovery Institute, looked a little bit at salmon, right? That's also bizarre, isn't it?
Yes. There again, you have a case where you have complex migratory behavior tied up with reproduction that from sort of an engineering standpoint, you might say, well, surely there's got to be a simpler way of doing this. But one of the things that I find most remarkable about migration is this element of spectacular engineering. Where, you know, salmon, for instance, can detect very, very tiny amounts of chemicals in the water that tell them where to go to get back to their original spawning site.
And wait, just so people get this clear, you're talking about a dumb fish that has really no signs of intelligence or consciousness at all. It's a dumb fish. And yet this is a fish that swims thousands of miles from some little creek somewhere in the middle of the state of Washington or Oregon or British Columbia. It's some little tiny creek. They swim from there into some big lake, then into some big river, and then into the ocean. They swim around the Pacific Ocean for thousands of miles. And then when they're getting ready to die, they swim back, they find exactly that same spot, jumping up waterfalls, swimming uphill. Isn't there an easier way that they could have figured this out?
Listen, that's what I would do. That's probably what you would do. But the great thing about biology is it's filled with these mysteries, these spectacular features that really almost challenge us in terms of our ability to understand. And they do. I mean, scientists will be decades figuring out exactly how salmon make this incredible trip, yet they do it.
Okay, this doesn't sound like intelligent design. It sounds like weird design. What do you mean when you use the term intelligent design?
Well, in its simplest expression, intelligent design is the idea that there are features of the living world that are best explained not as the product of undirected natural processes like gravity or chemistry or so forth, but rather as the product of an intelligence. Now, one of the features of intelligence, certainly in our experience, is artistic bravado, if you will. Vladimir Nabokov, the novelist who wrote Lolita, no one would ever mistake him for a cultural conservative theist, you know. Yet, throughout his career, his second career, if you will, in addition to being a novelist, was he was a butterfly expert at Harvard. He denied that natural selection could explain, for instance, features of mimicry in butterflies that he was persuaded showed artistic flair. And, I mean, he's basically a secularist, yet he said, when I look at butterflies, what I see shows the hand of an artist. So he, throughout his scientific career, said, no, it couldn't have been natural selection because natural selection doesn't have any foresight. It doesn't have any wisdom. It doesn't have any artistry. Yet that's what I see when I look at butterflies.
And by the way, he's not the only novelist, not to compare Vladimir Nabokov, who is one of the most critically acclaimed novelists, to Stephen King. But Stephen King, who is wildly popular, I think probably the best-selling novelist in the whole world right now, and has written a lot of books that are very hostile to organized Christianity, all of a sudden stunned the world, and we'll play this for you as soon as we come back, stunned the world by saying that he believes in intelligent design. Oh, no. Say it ain't so, Stephen. Dr. Paul Nelson is our guest. We will take your calls about the mysteries of birds and bees. And this stuff is just, I think the challenge here for people is, okay, if it's natural selection, what's the evolutionary advantage for motivating some little bug. I mean, it's a butterfly. First of all, the whole chrysalis thing, the metamorphosis, it gets to be a caterpillar and then it goes into a cocoon and then it becomes a butterfly. And then it goes for generations, thousands of miles, literally, back to a volcano in Mexico. How did this evolve according to natural selection and random Darwinian evolution? If someone wants to give a try explaining that, please give us a call.
Portions of the Michael Medved Show are brought to you in part by the Discovery Institute. To learn more, click on the Science and Culture banner at michaelmedved.com.
530 million years ago, the previously empty seas of the Cambrian era suddenly erupted with diverse forms of animal life. It was the most fantastic, mysterious event in Earth's history, the Cambrian explosion. Left behind in the fossil record was a riddle that troubled Charles Darwin himself. A mystery surrounding this explosion of life, which has led to the steady unraveling of Darwin's evolutionary theory. Darwin's Doubt, a revolutionary new book by Dr. Stephen Meyer, makes the most compelling, controversial, yet scientifically rigorous case yet to be offered for the intelligent design of life. Praised by scientists at Harvard, the University of Georgia, and the State University of New York, Darwin's Doubt is on sale now. Buy the book that will change your ideas about life and life's origins forever. For more details and to get your copy of Darwin's Doubt, go to darwinsdoubt.com. That's darwinsdoubt.com.
And on the Michael Medved Show, where you can save 15% or even more on car insurance with Geico, just go to geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. Or you can go to the website to geico.com. The only hard part, figuring out which way is even easier. And it's easy to see a great deal when you see it. And that's where you can get the free downloaded book with beautiful full-color illustrations. It's a companion piece to a great movie, which you can get on Blu-ray or DVD. But the free book is edited by my friend David Klinghoffer. It is called Metamorphosis, The Case for Intelligent Design in a Chrysalis. And yes, it's about butterflies. 1-800-955-1776. All right. I promised before, I'm on with Paul Nelson of Discovery Institute. He is has a doctorate in the philosophy of biology from University of Chicago and a doctorate in evolutionary theory. Dr. Nelson, Stephen King, novelist, has many, many books in which Christian evangelists and churches and people who are conventional Christians or particularly enthusiastic Christians end up being very, very bad, deranged, horrible people. But he's on with Terry Gross, and he says something that I think probably caused some car crashes in the Boston or New York or San Francisco area when they heard Stephen King on Fresh Air on NPR.
I remember you telling me the last time we spoke that you always believed in God. And it's a choice that you made, and you choose to believe it.
I choose to believe it, yeah. I think there's no downside to that. And the downside, if you say, well, okay, I don't believe in God, there's no evidence of God, then you're missing the stars in the sky, and you're missing the sunrises and sunsets, and you're missing the fact that bees pollinate all these crops and keep us alive, and the way that everything seems to work together at the same time. Everything is sort of built in a way that, to me, suggests intelligent design.
Okay, Dr. Nelson, has he since retreated from that and apologized for using the terms intelligent design?
Not to my knowledge. And think about what a novelist has to do. A novelist has to build a whole world. Anyone who writes even a short story knows how hard it is to construct that kind of world. And when the royalty checks for Stephen King's novels are cut, they're not made out to the laws of physics. They're made out to a particular hardworking writer who lives in Maine, who has to do the labor of constructing this world and putting all its pieces in place. So it doesn't surprise me, frankly, when Stephen King looks at the world, that he sees the handiwork of a designer, of an artist like himself. Kurt Vonnegut, of all people, also on NPR a few years ago, said he believed in intelligent design for very much the same reason. He said there's just no way that a blind process can build what we see. And Kurt Vonnegut, like Stephen King, was no friend of Christianity. So I think there's something very deep in human nature, especially for people like artists and composers and painters who have to do creative work themselves, that responds to that when they see it in nature.
Okay, and one of the things that you're not saying that artists and composers and creators are all conventional religious people or biblical literalists, and maybe you can just make clear to people before we get calls that get us off track here, which we will undoubtedly, but intelligent design is not, and you've studied this, you've done your graduate work on it. There is a difference between intelligent design and creationism. Explain the difference.
Intelligent design is a general idea that encompasses a lot of different possible viewpoints, and it goes deep into human antiquity. You can find Greek philosophers hundreds of years before Christ arguing about it. It's not tied to any particular revelatory tradition, and really all it says is it's possible to, from the things of nature, to say that there was an intelligence behind them. Now, the identity of that intelligence is an open question. People will answer it in different ways. But creationism, on the other hand, is typically tied to a particular religious tradition. It involves scriptural interpretation. So these are very different ways of thinking about our origins, and one of them has specifically religious connotations. Intelligent design, I think, does not. And you can find it, as I said, deep in human antiquity and throughout a variety of different religions, Hinduism, for instance, or the Abrahamic religions. But the idea itself is not specifically religious.
Let's go to your calls, 1-800-955-1776. Steve, in Chicago, you're on the Michael Medved Show with Paul Nelson.
Yes, I'd like to say I think a lot of people are missing the point about this entire subject as far as God, creationism, anybody that's an atheist involved in any of this, because I think, well, for the most part, people cling to religion for one reason, not for the love of a savior, but for what they can get out of it, to heaven or hell. And I think really that's true, that bait holds people onto that. As far as where all this came from, I think it could be so obvious if we look outside the box. I think you look up in the sky, you're going to find out, not in our time probably, but where it all actually started from. There is life out there, and that's probably most likely where this started from.
Okay, hold on. Help me with this for a minute. Are you still there, Steve?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I know there are people, I think Richard Dawkins has said, the great author of The God Delusion, that there may have been aliens who started human life. What started the aliens? Where did that life come from?
Well, I'm just saying this didn't come from, I don't think, somebody in a robe saying, welcome home when you're gone, and Come.
Right. Okay, fine. We've got that. We're not talking about creationism. We're talking about intelligent design. It's just, don't you see that if you say that some aliens came here to planet Earth and they started human life, that's in the movie Prometheus and many other movies. But if you say those aliens came from somewhere, where'd the aliens come from? I mean, who started them? Aliens from some third planet?
Well, that's the question, but I don't think you could use some kind of wild card just to say you have to have faith or somebody actually created this.
Nobody's saying you have to have faith. What one is saying is that the evidence, and boy, do you ever see this with birds and butterflies, suggests an intelligent design. Let's go to Paul. You want to comment on that?
Well, I think that you, Michael, have touched on exactly the problem, that you don't really solve the mystery by moving it to another planet. You end up really with an infinite regress there. So at some point, some intelligence, there needs to be some intelligence acting as a sort of primary cause, and that question is left open.
Okay, and speaking of questions being left open, there's a lot more to talk about with Dr. Paul Nelson and your calls, this Science and Culture Update. One of the things to talk about is an opportunity to join us on a briefing on intelligent design. It's coming up August 9th and 10th in Seattle. And my wife and I, Diane, are both going to be speaking at this briefing, along with Dr. Nelson, who you met today, Dr. Stephen Meyer, the author of the great new book, Darwin's Doubt, the incomparable George Gilder, and other scholars from Discovery Institute. We'll also be doing a little bit of a Sabbath program there, because we're going to be there over our Sabbath. Find out about it, go to themichaelmedved.com and find out about joining us at this Insider's Briefing. We'll be right back with Dr. Paul Nelson. Portions. 34 minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show. If you're looking for a last-minute Father's Day gift, go to michaelmedved.com or go to medvedhistorystore.com. And at Medved History Store, you can get one of the new gift certificates that we have for Dad, where he can choose for himself any of our 100 history programs that we have available for people. Perfect Father's Day gift at medvedhistorystore.com. We're speaking right now to Dr. Paul Nelson, who's going to be joining me at the Insider's Briefing for Discovery Institute the weekend of August 9th, coming up in beautiful Seattle, and no place in the country more beautiful than Seattle, August 9th. People can click on the Science and Culture banner to find out more about that. Dr. Nelson, one of the things in your movie Flight is a series of scenes, and I know you're in the movie. It was actually produced and directed by incredibly artistic and amazing nature photographers, are scenes of starlings. These, again, dumb little birds who are flying 300,000 birds in the air together in tight formation, like the Blue Angels aerial stunt team from the U.S. Navy. And yet these flyers, the starlings, don't have those complex navigation systems or guidance systems that they have in F-18s or F-35s. How do they manage this, turning so precisely and flying in such tight formation?
You know, research done in Italy appears to indicate that any individual starling monitors the five or six birds in its immediate neighborhood. It can't follow the whole flock. I mean, who could follow 100,000 or 300,000 birds at a time? It simply pays attention to those in its immediate neighborhood, responding in milliseconds to their movements. And as you scale that up from a handful of birds up to 100,000 or 300,000, you get something that looks, as you'll see in the film, very much like a living thing moving through the sky. These murmurations is what they're called. Take your breath away, because the birds do not crash into each other. You know, yet there are, you know, scores and scores of them doing this on a winter evening in England is where the footage is from. I find it amazing, because try to imagine not just five Blue Angels flying together, but 50 or 100 or 200. And I think inevitably something would go wrong. Actually, I have to disagree with you, Michael. I think these birds do have navigational systems. They're just incredibly sophisticated, built-in, genetically wired systems.
And yeah, when you talk about genetically wired, flight is kind of complicated, to say the least, as we understand. I mean, we just flew into Washington, D.C. here. How do they get all this information about flying and the intricacies of a feather on this tiny little scrap of DNA?
You know, one of the papers that I would like to write with one of my colleagues at Discovery asks the question, where is the feather? If you crack open a chicken egg, you're making yourself an omelet. What you see is the yolk and, you know, the albumen and, you know, pretty much nothing else is visible there to your naked eye. But it's there. The information is there somewhere in that egg to build that feather with all its complexity. And how that unfolds, how that information is unpacked from DNA during the process of development, and probably other sources of information beyond DNA that we don't yet know about, to me is an absolutely amazing puzzle that I hope to see at least partly unpacked in my own life. Right now, I think it's an open question how that happens.
Let's go to Lido in Sacramento, California. You're on the MedVed Show with Dr. Paul Nelson.
Hello, gentlemen. I believe that inherently every man and woman born of a sperm and an egg believes that there is creator, whether they claim it or not. But what happens when men are able to create other men with the sperm and the egg? What scares me is genome therapy, DNA processes, or not so much cloning, but what happens when man creates the first man without the sperm and the egg? Does he then proclaim himself as God? That's my breaking point right there with the theory of evolution or creation or intelligent design. Intelligent design means that there can be any intelligence, not just a great intelligence. So when man creates the first man without the sperm and the egg, I see man proclaiming himself to be God. And that's where
Dr. Nelson, quickly, a fascinating question. Thank you for it. Dr. Nelson.
Well, I do think there's a real danger there of the kind of hubris that can come from a science that's unrestrained by philosophy or theology. I do think the caller has identified a real danger.
Okay, and when we come back, are we really close to creating any form of life originally in the laboratory? We will get to that and more this Science and Discovery Hour with Dr. Paul Nelson.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show.
On the Michael Medved Show with Dr. Paul Nelson of Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. This is our Science and Culture update. We're talking about two magnificent new nature films that in a completely inobtrusive and a non-preachy way make the case for intelligent design. They only do that after showing you some of those spectacular moments in nature involving birds and butterflies. You can also get a free download of a great new book called Metamorphosis, which is about how butterflies emerge from inside cocoons. They are once caterpillars. Okay, Dr. Nelson, how does this work in evolutionary terms? You have a PhD in evolutionary biology, and how does it work that natural selection would lead to this incredibly elaborate process of caterpillars turning into butterflies?
Actually, it doesn't work. If you go to the scientific literature and look for the explanation in terms of natural selection for the origin of metamorphosis, it's not there. Because the process itself defies the logic of natural selection. In selection, each stage needs to have a functional role. The problem with forming a chrysalis and turning yourself, if you're a caterpillar, into so much goo, is you've got to get out of that stage. It'd be like Houdini going into a water box with no plan to get out. Houdini's not going to go into that box unless he knows, I've got a way to get out of here. Likewise, the caterpillar's not going to dissolve away 85% of its tissues without some plan for getting out the other side and turning into a butterfly. For that, you need foresight. You need the thing that characterizes intelligence, which is the ability to look into the future. Natural selection can't do that. It's a blind process. It's got to work now or not at all. So it doesn't work. And I think for that very reason, people like me and others have begun to look for alternatives to the natural selection story for the origin of things like metamorphosis.
Let's go to Kathleen in Chestnut Hill, Pennsylvania. You're on the Michael Medved Show with Paul Nelson.
Hi, Michael.
Hey.
My fundamental problem with intelligent design is that it looks at the inadequacies of our current scientific knowledge and its ability to explain complexity. And it posits a theory that cannot be proven scientifically. You can't frame experiments. You can never prove what you're trying to accomplish. Consequently, it may be a fantastic philosophical argument, but it is not science. And that is my fundamental problem.
Dr. Nelson.
Well, the funny thing about intelligent design, contrary to what the caller is saying, is skeptics are testing it all the time. I'll give you an example. In 1996, Mike Behe, one of my colleagues, wrote a book called Darwin's Black Box, where he argued that certain molecular structures, like the motor of a bacterium, could not be produced by natural selection. What happened was a whole industry of critics of this idea sprang up, and people were starting to test Behe's claims, saying, well, is there a Darwinian pathway? And the normal process of scientific debate kicked in. You know, Mike proposed an idea. Other people tried to test it and refute it. And that's going on right now. I can tell you, if you want to publish a paper on intelligent design in the scientific literature, come at it as a critic, and the doors of the best journals on the planet will be open to you.
What about this question we were talking about before? We had a caller who asked about human beings creating in the lab another human being without the use of existing sperm and egg. Are we close to being able to create advanced forms of life in the laboratory?
No time soon, but I tell you what has been done. Craig Venter and his colleagues have copied the chromosome of a bacterial cell and transplanted their artificially made copy into a cell membrane, and they bootstrapped it up. It was, you know, in a sense, synthetic life. But Venter was the first person to say this was a copy. We plagiarized an existing genetic text, if you will. Doing that from scratch, that's a long way off, if ever. I think if we ever synthesize life ourselves, as human beings, we will have done so by copying what already exists. Doing it from scratch is simply not in our power.
Let's go to Bob in Detroit. You're on the Michael Medved Show with Dr. Nelson.
Yes. These theories are to explain how we got our life to where it is now. But if natural selection is proper, shouldn't we be seeing macro evolution occurring currently? Is that occurring?
I would say no, and in fact, one of the things I do professionally is look at experiments that try to sort of replicate the process of macroevolution in complex organisms like flies, for instance. And what we see is when you perturb these systems, they crash. They have a limited range of variability outside of which they cease to exist, almost like the fruit fly is saying, look, if you want one of me at all, you've got to respect the integrity of this system. So macroevolution of an undirected sort, postulated by Darwinism, appears not to happen, at least we can't observe it happening.
Yeah, one of the things that I've always wondered about, and to me has been a huge challenge, is chimpanzees are pretty clever, elephants are pretty clever, whales and dolphins are pretty clever. How come they didn't go further in terms of developing consciousness and intelligence? In other words, we have no evidence at all that whales are notably more intelligent during the last, 300 million years, during which time human beings and our ancestors have developed a lot.
Well, I think there are things about our species that really define us uniquely, our sense of empathy. Now, of course, you can find sort of more primitive manifestations of that in other mammalian species, but our altruism, our moral sense, our ability to do things like higher mathematics appear uniquely to characterize us. And there does seem to be a discontinuity between Homo sapiens and the rest of nature that classically, again, going back into antiquity, philosophers said, that means you are a rational being. You know, you are in this special class of beings that stands apart from the rest of nature. So, Michael, I would agree with you. There does seem to be a discontinuity there that has not been spanned by natural processes.
Yeah, and they can't, as much as they want to give these chimps the best possible education, they could send them to Harvard. They're still not going to pass that on necessarily to the next generation of chimps. We'll be right back with Dr. Paul Nelson of Discovery Institute.
Michael Medved.
Five minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show, and if you go to michaelmedved.com and you click on the Science and Culture banner for the Science and Culture Center of Discovery Institute, you can get a completely free, a gorgeously illustrated copy downloaded of Metamorphosis, The Case for Intelligent Design in a Nutshell. Well, actually, they cross out the word nutshell and put in chrysalis. It's about butterflies. It's edited by the great David Klinghoffer. You can also find out all about two fabulous DVDs that are fun to watch with your kids, frankly. One is called Flight, the other Metamorphosis. Both of them feature my guest, Dr. Paul Nelson, who is a fellow of the Center for Science and Culture. Let us go directly to your calls and to Hank in Renton, Washington. You're on the Medved Show.
Hello, Michael.
Hey.
Great show. And Dr. Paul, you're a really, really smart guy. I like that. Hey, anyway, this salmon, the butterfly, and the starlings, okay? I think it's just so simple, it's just ridiculous that the Darwin people won't accept this. It's just something that was designed by an intelligent being or whatever that we're never going to figure out until we're ready to. I mean, we're so arrogant. We think we're the cock of the walk. And we're not the cock of the walk.
Well, I appreciate your sentiment. I would make a distinction between figuring out how something works and figuring out where it came from. I think we will learn a lot about, for instance, salmon migration or bird migration. And that's the glory of science, figuring out these mysteries. But figuring out their origin may be a much tougher challenge. So, yes, I think knowledge is forthcoming in the one area, but it may be a lot harder to find in the other, especially if what we're looking at was caused by an intelligence with some whimsy and artistic skill.
Speaking of whimsy and artistic skill, I was reading in the British press about this sort of nutty, fruity British professor who studies cheetahs. I don't know if you know something about this or about cheetahs. He has determined that cheetahs literally can go from standing still to moving at more than 70 miles an hour in 3.5 seconds, which is better than a Ferrari.
Well, I saw a piece in the New York Times today that said that it's actually not their speed that makes them such good hunters, although that's part of it. It's their ability to slow down really quickly and change direction really quickly. My brother actually is a robotics expert at Boston Dynamics. He studies cheetahs professionally to try to reverse engineer what they do.
Yeah, if you could build a car like that, how come we don't have a car called Cheetah? If it goes from 0 to 70 in 3.5 seconds, I mean, that's there's a lot more in heaven and earth than is dreamt of in your philosophy, Horatio, but not in Paul Nelson's philosophy. He's a fellow at Discovery Institute. Check out the movies in which he's featured. They are magnificent. You will enjoy them, and you will thank me, just as we can thank the Center for Science and Culture for expanding consciousness, which is what we're really all about in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2013. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.